The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Sustained violence and rioting has been spreading across the UK over the weekend, with mosques and Islamic centres across the UK and Northern Ireland targeted. Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, has come out to condemn the unrest in all its forms.
We've seen Muslim communities targeted, attacks on mosques, other minority communities singled out, Nazi salutes in the street, attacks on the police, wanton violence alongside racist rhetoric. So no, I won't shy away from calling it what it is, far-right thuggery.
Now, I'm joined by freelance journalist, London-based Vincent McAvinney. Vincent, good morning.
Good morning.
Does this all go back to Southport?
In a way, yes, it does go back to the events of Monday last week, because the people on the far right who are organising and mobilising what is just violent thuggery, not valid protests around this country, are exploiting that tragedy, used it and to put out a false narrative about the perpetrator of that attack, and have used it since then to basically rile people up around the country and awaken this sort of racist and fascist sentiment. Britain has always had a problem with the far right. What you're seeing is an older generation of that movement manipulating on social media and using apps like Telegram and Signal, encrypted apps, to organise. And it's often, if you look at the footage, very young people who are the ones attacking the police, attacking buildings and organisations, whilst the older ones sort of stand back and direct things somewhat.
One wouldn't have thought there would be sufficient numbers to mount the extent of the rioting that has been seen across Britain.
Well, what you've got to remember is, in the same way as perhaps you can draw a comparison into recent years' troubles in Northern Ireland, where you've seen increasing numbers of young people getting engaged in that sort of age-old sectarian conflict, because the older hands at this, who are still invested in it and still, you know, it's what they do, they have learnt and sort of used the tools of social media to attract younger people to their cause, to try and lure them in. And what we are seeing is definitely with some of those being brought before the courts yesterday in their 20s and such, is that sort of younger people are being sort of groomed into this stuff via social media.
Now, the social media seems to be the virus that allows all of this to infect young people who may be tempted by the messages, you know, about disenfranchisement, that all the immigrants get the breaks and they get none, even though, you know, Britain offers many breaks to people of all classes and all colours and so on. But looking at social media, I saw a post from Tommy Robinson, who's the, you know, extreme right-wing leader. And it turns out the Daily Mail indicated where he and his families were holidaying. And he says, "My kids are crying. We come here so I could spend some quality time with them. Now they are scared people are coming to get them. The Daily Mail have purposely revealed the exact location of my family. How can they be allowed to do this?" Isn't that an extraordinary, ironic and hypocritical statement?
Incredibly. And Tommy Robinson is a convicted criminal. He's a fraudster. He is a racist and a fascist. And he stoked all this up and then jetted off last week to absconded from court and jetted off to Cyprus. He didn't have to go there. He didn't have to be there, but he was escaping the law effectively. And I think people will have little sympathy for him. It's a repeated pattern of behaviour that he has engaged in. He has been involved in the past in putting other people's safety well at risk. And so, you know, I don't think there's much sympathy with the likes of Tommy Robinson, who is on the run from the law currently.
Now, what about the response from the British government? I mean, Keir Starmer seems determined to root this out. It's a big ask, though, given what's been happening over the last couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, I think Keir Starmer is trying to take a multi-track approach. He is hoping effectively that the magistrates' courts. He's in a very different situation in 2011 when riots happened on Conservatives-led coalition that had just come in. The justice system was not under the strain that it's in now, and it also had much more experienced police officers. Under the coalition years, you saw sort of mismanagement of the justice system, and that's why Labour have come in with. Prisons nearly at capacity and a two-year backlog in our courts. And you also saw sort of more mature police being let go during the and made redundant during the coalition years. And we've got quite a much younger force than we had with less experience of dealing with this kind of thing. But what is going on is they are gathering up huge amounts of social media people, these media footage these people are creating themselves. They are identifying people in it. They're using CCTV and they're putting drones up over the protests. And they are ramping up the number of arrests. It's now over 400. And what we saw yesterday in the first day in court, where people were turning up in magistrates' court, they haven't gone to the full 24-hour magistrates' courts that they did in the 2011 riots, but they are maximizing the hours that they're operational currently to get people through. And what we're seeing in these first appearances yesterday was people in quite shock that they weren't being granted bail, that they're being remanded in custody. The government says that it has got several hundred, around 500 places available in the next week to help cope with the ongoing violence. And what they're hoping is this sends out a signal that, you know, if you are picked up on one of these things, you will not be granted bail. You'll have a lengthy wait for your trial because of the delays in our system currently here. And also, as we've seen from the Just Stop Oil protesters recently, the mood in the country is very much, and it seems in the justice system, is that, you know, those protesters got pretty lengthy sentences for non-violent but disruptive protests. And I think the feeling in many parts of the UK, because this is a it's a country of 65 million and these are a few hundred idiots around the country, that they should also be dealt with as strongly and receive the maximum.
Okay, so here we have a situation where there's a shortage of magistrates and therefore court time. There's a shortage of prison cells, but they've somehow managed to get some cells available, a couple of hundred cells available. But it does mean that while these people are waiting for their trial, whenever that might be, in maybe 6 months' time, they're behind bars for 6 months and therefore incapable of fomenting trouble.
Yes, exactly. And it also puts out a warning to others as well, that if you're caught up in something like this, you will get put away for a significant amount of time, even before your trial begins.
What about civil liberties groups? I mean, there's a touch of round up the usual suspects about all of this.
I mean, in terms of civil liberties, I mean, the more vast concern in this country is for how people from ethnic minority communities and religious communities are doing, because, you know, we've seen incidences where people have been, hijacking traffic lights, essentially, and screening the cars, you know, checking and demanding to know if people inside are white and English. So, the real concern in terms of the rights for people at the moment is obviously we want free, you know, fair justice system and people to be treated decently in it and provided legal defense. But really the concern is how people and ethnic minorities in this country right now are feeling very nervous. Some have reported that they're not going to work, that they're staying at home, working from home, because they feel that there's a tension on the streets. And if you are visibly, non-white, then it's very difficult. And there are signs that there is something sort of, all the chatter is that there are bigger things planned for Wednesday again, evening and night. And so there is, a lot of fear that this isn't going away. So that is where the primary concern in terms of that is.
What about the social media companies? I mean, they will be called into Downing Street to explain themselves. Elon Musk, of course, will not be there. He is the one who's even stoking up more of it by suggesting that the UK is on the way to a civil war.
Yeah, I mean, since Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter, transforming it into X, it sort of doesn't engage as it once did in terms of what it does with governments and authorities. He's been, focusing on, if you look through the accounts that he has been tweeting and following about this and sort of replying to, these are some of them like European invasion, far right accounts that operate across Europe. They spread disinformation and lies. They are overtly racist accounts. And these are the sources that he is choosing to engage with. what, you know, we might get more of a reaction from the likes of Meta, which has Instagram and Facebook, and likely I think there's going to be meetings between the government and the social media companies that will play ball. But ultimately, the thing that's going to potentially cause trouble for Twitter is that, you know, it is a crime in this country to incite racial hatred, both online and in the real world. And there seems to be a lot of this going on at the moment on Twitter. And, you know, we know that the police are sort of combing through posts and tracking very closely what the leaders of all this are posting on there. And it's embarrassing for Twitter. And we might see, you know, Twitter X has struggled particularly with advertisers since the takeover of Elon Musk. And I think there's going to be pressure on any advertisers in the UK still remaining on the platform that they stop giving their advertising money to it, because it's their posts are probably appearing next to the likes of, Tommy Robinson.
But, you know, his attitude towards the arrival in the UK of people from outside, he himself, less people need to be reminded, he was born in South Africa. He's South African. He masquerades, I suppose, in many eyes, not deliberately, but as an American, but he ain't. He too is an alien.
Yes, he is someone whose political views are all over the spectrum. And we've seen, you know, by his interactions with the US political system at the moment, that, you know, ostensibly what you've got to remember is with these tech pros and Silicon Valley people, they're just doing whatever they think will get Trump at the moment back into office, because it's more tax cuts for them. Even though Trump has, you know, made it clear that he's no fan of environmental causes, and he's critiqued EVs at multiple points and saying, you know, Kamala Harris wants to steal your car and all these kinds of things. You know, Elon Musk is still backing him to the hilt and aligning himself there, because he thinks that for his bottom line, it is better and that he will get another big tax cut. Mm.
Vincent, thank you very much for joining us. That's Vincent McAvinney, based in London. Of course, there was trouble over the weekend in Belfast as well. Alison Morris, correspondent and columnist with the Belfast Telegraph, specialising in crime and security, joins me. Alison, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you tell us about the sequence of events over the weekend? I mean, we had the burning out of shops owned by people perceived to be Muslims, but also attacks on other non-Northern Irish entities. What happened overnight?
Yeah, so as you said, on Saturday following that protest, the sort of worst elements of those protesters went on a walkabout through Belfast. There was a supermarket belonging to a Syrian refugee who had started his own business was burned. Cafes were burned. There was also attacks on police and other people. Last night, and completely there's nothing, you know, online or anything to indicate this was going to start last night in Sandy Row, which is a very loyalist area of South Belfast. Rioting broke out. Police were there in very heavy numbers very quickly. They mobilised very quickly. Plastic baton rounds were fired. There was about 150 people, mainly young people, involved in those disturbances. There was also earlier that day some groups of women who apparently tried to walk back through to where the Islamic Centre is in South Belfast, and they were prevented from doing so. But what we have now is police are telling us this morning that they've arrested a 15-year-old boy in relation to the riotous activity in South Belfast. But also a man in his 30s is currently critical and in hospital with very serious head injuries, having been attacked in what police say is a race hate attack. We're told that he's attacked by a mob who at one stage were jumping on his head. He suffered very serious injuries. We're not sure what the ethnicity of that person is, but the inference by the PSNI saying that they're investigating as a hate crime would indicate that that person comes from a minority community. Mm. So, you know, this isn't looking like it's going to go away anytime soon. We can see what's happening in England, and it seems to be that there are elements, albeit very small and localised elements, who are mimicking that behaviour of what is happening in other cities across England.
Mm. Were the PSNI taken utterly by surprise by the events that unfolded?
So I think on Saturday, while the PSNI said that they had like a goal command structure in place to deal with what happened on Saturday, there was elements of it that clearly took them by surprise. We've all known that the protest was planned for the weekend for days. I mean, I was getting WhatsApp messages from people with screen grabs of messages that were being circulated among certain communities saying, asking people to gather at various points. And there were protests across Northern Ireland on Saturday. they passed off peacefully. People did gather for a period of time, and they blocked a road, and then they all dispersed and left. It was the Belfast City Centre protest with the violence, and you could see, just if you look on social media, look at any of those pictures, you can see by the elements that showed up, many of them have masks over their faces, hoods pulled down over their eyes. Some of them were identified as people who we would know to be convicted loyalist paramilitaries. And then we have the added element, as if we don't need, you know, as if we haven't got enough, you know, race hate of our own hanging around in this city. We had the added element of the Kulak Says No protesters who showed up and stood arm in arm then with those loyalist paramilitaries at that protest. What happened, that went on, there was a counter-protest of demonstrators on the other side. They include politicians and people from refugee support groups and all sorts of things. There was a lot of shouting and back and forward and a few missiles thrown, but it looked as though police were going to keep a handle on that. But then what happened is it broke off, and about 100 or 150 or so of those people who had been gathered at that protest started walking, I think in an attempt to gain access to the Islamic Centre in South Belfast, and that is when police seemed to have been caught off guard, and that's when we noticed that the police operation started to fail, because they scattered, you know, the sort of racists went walkabout, this, you know, and they scattered in different various directions. At one stage, there was a fairly farcical moment where they appeared to get lost in the Holy Land, which would traditionally be a sort of student area of Belfast. And, you know, our photographer, he was taking pictures, noted that they were being led by a man from Dublin with a tricolour who clearly didn't know his way around and so therefore had went off in the wrong direction. They then made their way to the Lower Ormo Botanic Avenue areas, and that's when there was businesses attacked. There was hotels attacked. There was windows smashed, and there was tourists in that area who were terrified by what was happening and noted that they would never be back in Belfast again. There was a cruise ship docked in Belfast at the weekend too. The passengers were meant to come off and do an organised tour, and that had to be cancelled. So you can see the devastation to the people whose businesses have been destroyed.
It's extraordinary, Alison, that description of a guy going round with a tricolour in the wrong part of Belfast.
Absolutely.
Time was he mightn't have got out with his tricolour intact.
Well, look, I'm going to tell you, the same people a few weeks ago were holding protests about an Irish language school being built in East Belfast. There has been various attacks, and there was one just yesterday where there was a device left close to a ground where a GAA team trained. I mean, the people who we're speaking about have dedicated their lives to be against anything of Irishness, but all of a sudden when we find a common cause such as racism, they seem to be able to unite with people who had travelled from Dublin to Belfast for this and then ended up in Sandy Row and in that loyalist area actually socialising with them before they went home. This is the bizarre thing.
Quite bizarre.
There are bars that Catholics couldn't step foot in, but yet, you know, these people were welcomed.
Yeah, the analysis would suggest that you've got a crowd of bully boy loyalists who no longer can bully the nationalists as they once did, so they found another target.
There's always been a sort of tradition, and I don't want to paint, you know, an entire community with this, because what we are told too is that attack last night, that race hate attack, it was people from Sandy Row, that loyalist area, who came out and protected that man and stopped him from being killed. And, you know, there are decent people in every community, and we know that, and this is not universal. But what we also know is, and this is historically proven fact, and you can take this back to people like Johnny Adair, that there are aspects and elements within loyalism who have always aligned themselves to the British nationalist far right, be that through Combat 18, be that through the National Front in the past, more recently through the EDL, and they're clearly in contact, and social media has only increased that, because it makes it easier for these people to keep in touch and to share their fairly vile ideas and rhetoric and misinformation. And I know previously you were speaking about social media companies and their responsibility, but we've seen these protests be organised on social media with complete and utter nonsense misinformation. For instance, there was a protest outside a hotel in Belfast 2 days ago, the Clayton Hotel facing the BBC, because someone posted online a video, which was actually, I think, a celebration that was taking place, claiming that it was migrants who were all being housed in this hotel and were having a great time at the taxpayers' expense. Absolute nonsense. Hotels never housed migrants or refugees. It's a functioning hotel. And yet these people showed up to protest. And that shows the level of social media misinformation that's being allowed to permeate down. And people who, well, might have already held those views for a start, or people who are just quite vulnerable and susceptible to misinformation are being sucked in by this.
Is it likely to bring about, do you think, in either in Stormont, which is being recalled for Thursday, or in Westminster, some sort of censorship of social media? Or is that already beyond the pale? It's too far gone, too enmeshed in the makeup of society these days that nothing can be done. One of my texts, social media, the curse of our age. The governments of the world should get together and agree just to shut down social media totally. We managed just fine without it before we had it. That's from Ed.
I was a journalist long before social media existed. And sometimes I wonder back to those halcyon days when I wasn't being abused on a daily basis by people online. But the fact is that you have people like Elon Musk who are making huge amounts of money from this. And we, you know, we as publishers, you as a broadcaster, we are held to account for what we say. If we libel someone, if we spread misinformation, there are penalties, some of them financial, or you can be in contempt of court, and that could see you in a criminal court and behind bars. So you have to make sure that you're always checking, double checking, triple checking your sources. There's no such no requirements on social media. People say whatever the hell they like. I mean, I did actually say it's like an all-you-can-eat buffet for extremists now, and that's what it feels like. And the fact is that there is no real consequences. Stormont don't have any power to do anything about that, but Westminster do have power to legislate, and then that legislation then could be passed down in the Northern Ireland legislation. And they were trying to do that with in terms of the bill that was going through the online harm prevention bill that was going through Westminster. But it was very difficult because as soon as legislation is made, social media moves on, you know, so it moves on to a different platform, a different format, and it actually moves too fast for the legislation almost, because legislation, as you know, it's a cumbersome tool. It takes time. It takes years sometimes to pass through, those bills to pass through and become laws. And before that even happened, the social media companies have vastly moved on, and they're way ahead of the legislation. I'm not sure what you do. I mean, my own salary means that I have to, at some stages, some points, just completely ignore it. I go on holiday, I don't even look at it. And in other cases, you feel that you have to correct misinformation as well that is being put out there or being attributed to you. But I mean, it's like playing whack-a-mole. You know, no sooner have you get rid of one fake account, another one pops up.
Alison, thank you very much for joining us. Alison Morris, correspondent and columnist with the Belfast Telegraph, specialising in crime and security.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.